This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's 12:05 here in the studio on Tuesday, the 16th of August. You're tuned into Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Lily Chai, and
Richard Bradbury.
Yes, here on BFM 89.9. What are we talking about today?
Malaysia's travel industry and how it's lining up for a takeoff.
Right. We've been, you know, it's been 3 months, right, since we opened our borders for travel, and most restrictions have been lifted, and international tourists are once again seen in airports and KL coming into Malaysia, right? And we have actually met the initial goal of 2 million international tourists, and the new target is now set at 4.5 million. So later we'll be having a little bit of conversation about this with Hannah Pearson, the founder of Peer Anderson and regional director at the Adventure Travel Trade Association, for a little bit of update on the travel industry. So, everyone knows that, especially the airline industry, was really badly affected during this period of the pandemic. And it was 2.5 years, and since, you know, all the borders have been reopened, I mean, I'm sorry.
So Malaysia did reopen its borders on the 1st of April this year, to the relief of many, especially those in the travel and tourism industry and the supporting sectors, of course. The country has received over 2 million international tourists, as Lily said just a minute ago, which was the initial target for this year. And this accounted for roughly 8.6 million ringgit in tourism receipts. Now, based on these positive signs, Tourism, Arts and Culture Minister Datuk Sri Nancy Shukri has revised the benchmark for welcoming international tourists. The new target is set at 4.5 million international tourist arrivals with 11.1 billion in tourism receipts for this year. This number is expected to increase after the opening of the Brunei-Malaysia border, which happened, of course, on the 1st of August. And according to the Kuala Lumpur Hotel Market Outlook and Prospects 2022 by CBRE Asia Pacific, KL alone is expected to take on bookings of 3,000 hotel rooms this year.
And according to a fintech firm, tourism is coming back with a bang. And while it foresees that some economic disruptions along the way, the tourism boom is still coming. And the tourism industry has been a significant contributor to Malaysia's economy, as everyone knows. Based on statistics, the tourism industry contributes about 15.9% to Malaysia's economy and supported 3.6 million jobs. And this made up about, you know, about 24% of the total workforce in the country. And during the pandemic, especially during 2020 to 2021, the country lost an estimate of 300 billion ringgit. And many in the tourism sector had to undergo reskilling in order to survive. We have heard many people who worked in the bus drivers, they are trying, you know, F&B industry and things like that. So businesses in the tourism industry had to downsize, with many shutting down, of course, and to sustain themselves.
Now, along the way, Malaysia has also eased travel restrictions. And according to Nancy Shukri, we're one of the most hassle-free countries to visit at the moment. Fully vaccinated travellers no longer need to undergo COVID-19 tests pre-departure and on arrival. This includes children aged 17 and below. Travel insurance will also no longer be a prerequisite for travel. Relaxation of travel restrictions around Asia. This is some more details. As of July 2022, most Southeast Asian countries like Singapore, Thailand, Malaysia and Vietnam have stopped mandatory testing for fully vaccinated travellers before the travel. However, China's policy to strictly limit non-essential travel out of the country has affected the travel industry within Asia as well. Based on a study by Asian Development Bank, in 2019, travelers from China made up more than 30% of tourists to some Southeast Asian nations, which hurt the region even more when China closed its borders.
And a travel data company, AO, OAG said that Asia's travel recovery is slower compared to other continents because of its reliance on international travel, as well as deferring reopening policies in the region. And they also added that Southeast Asia is at about 66% of flight capacity from pre-pandemic levels, and this is compared to Europe and North America, which have recovered back to around 88 to 90% of their pre-pandemic capacity. So Southeast Asia's travel recovery is expected to face some pressures in the form of rising costs and interest rates, inflation, and a looming danger of recession. And airlines have been increasing fares as a result of jet fuel prices soaring up to 128% from a year ago. And this has not impacted demand, as people have had 2 years being pent up, you know, at home. And however, this could change because if fuel surcharges and inflation start eating into travel spending.
Now, rising interest rates also have the added effect of devaluing the currency for emerging economies against the US dollar, which in turn makes imports costlier and reducing traveler spending power on non-essentials like holidays. Mm. Lavinia Rajaram, Expedia's Asia head of public relations, has revealed Singapore-based travellers are already planning for holidays at the year-end, while others are looking to book trips for the slower months of September and October. Mm. He also added, if airlines can get their flight capacity back to pre-pandemic levels, air ticket prices may normalise. Let's hope so. A recent trip back to the UK cost me an absolute fortune. This was mainly two reasons. Obviously, it was a last-minute booking for something I had to get back for, you know, it's an emergency. But fuel prices had gone up, and a normal ticket to the UK is around 4,000 ringgit return. This was 12,500 ringgit. And it was just like, if I hadn't had to spend it, of course, that's the price you would pay for like a first class ticket back home. And that's an economy class ticket.
As for my experience, I'm going to Korea next month, but I booked my tickets in end of May, June, and the prices were actually okay. And looking at the flight capacity, when I booked, there were only 5 people in the whole flight, including myself.
Yeah.
So the tickets were not bad, actually, for AirAsia, not talking about like the higher end, but, you know, for just, you know, budget traveling, right? Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, 1,008. Right. Including insurance and luggage, and you know, I think it is a fair price, not the cheapest, I would say, but yeah. Mm.
One thing I did notice though is both here at KLIA and in Heathrow, the amount of people that were there was ridiculous. And to kind of top it all off and to make things even more frustrating, there were not enough staff. And that's a huge issue. We know people have gone on to do other things during the pandemic, or they've been laid off, or for whatever reason. There was not enough staff available at the check-in counters. The queue took 2 hours here at KLAA. On the way back, it took 3 hours. And that's just because it feels like it's okay saying the industry wants to move forward, but there's massive, massive staffing issues, you know, and that's going to cause frustration amongst passengers, which is why I think that the time that I traveled was like that point where everything had just suddenly opened up, and so everybody was rushing out. But a few days later, it had calmed down. But then it kind of picked back up again. Mm. So,
To tackle the, you know, staff shortage issue, is it about, you know, the minimum wage not being enough? Or is it because everyone is still, you know, afraid of approaching and tapping into the industry, like going back to it? What is it? Like, what is the...
I think there's a combination of things. I think here in Malaysia, for sure, minimum wage is one of those things that's definitely causing an issue. But as I just mentioned, I think a lot of people have... instead of just wanting to work at an airport and loading bags into whatever, they've decided to go into something else that might be a bit more meaningful for them. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay, so we want to ask you, have you noticed like an increase in crowds, or have you traveled lately? Can you share your experience with us on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us on BFM Radio. Later, shortly after the break, we will be speaking to Hannah Pearson, the founder of Pierre Anderson and regional director at the Adventure Travel Trade Association, right after the break. We'll be back after some messages. BFM 89.9.
Burning for more. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Lily Chai, and...
Rich Bradbury.
You've forgotten your name for a while. All right. On Enterprise Biz Bites today, we're talking about Malaysia's travel industry and how it's lining for takeoff. Because we are roughly 3 months into reopening our borders, and we have met the initial goal of 2 million international tourists, and now we are targeting to set it at 4.5 million. And we are going to have a conversation with Hannah Pearson, the founder of Pier Anderson and regional director at the Adventure Travel Trade Association. But do keep your thoughts coming. Have you traveled lately? How has the crowd been? And what have you been seeing, you know, among your friends? Do share your thoughts with us. You can reach us on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Thanks for staying on the line with us, Hannah. The first question I have is, what have been the big developments in tourism across the region over the last few weeks?
Well, what we've really seen in June and coming into July as well, the beginning of August, is that the region as a whole is starting to hit some milestones. So, for example, in July, Thailand had over 1 million international visitors. Now, that's the highest not only for Thailand since the pandemic hit, but actually the first in the region to hit that kind of 1 million mark. To put that into perspective, pre-pandemic, Thailand was, you know, over a year, it had 39 million people. So it had, you know, on average about 3 million. So this is still far from that level, but they're hitting those milestones, and it's really encouraging to see. Singapore Airlines Group returned to profit in April to June 2022, and they had actually their second highest quarterly profit in its history. And the interesting thing to always remember about Singapore Airlines is that it doesn't have any domestic flights to support that. That means that's all international flights. Even if you're looking at Singapore, Singapore also hit some big milestones. 500,000 travellers arrived into Singapore in June. Indonesia, its June arrivals, it hit 345,000, which in itself, you know, you compare it to 500,000 to Singapore, 1 million to Thailand, is not that big. But the year-on-year increase is huge. 1,974% year on year. And of course, they started from an incredibly low base. This time last year, the borders weren't really open to international tourists. So anything is an increase, but it's still impressive. And even if you're looking month on month, it's still a 63% growth. So things are really moving in the right direction. If you look at Vietjet, one of the low-cost airlines in Vietnam, it actually confirmed its order of 200 Boeing 737 MAXs. That's an enormous order that really shows that, you know, airlines see the light at the end of the tunnel now. Now they're willing to commit to that kind of number of fleet. It's enormous. And lastly, back to Singapore, you know, Changi Airport has announced that it's going to reopen its Terminal 4 on the 13th of September. So again, there's this confidence, at least within the aviation sector, that things are picking up, things are moving. And that's been really encouraging.
And what about closer to home, Hannah? What about Malaysia?
Well, Malaysia over the last month or so has seen some big steps here as well. So one of the fairly big steps really is this now removal of the requirement to fill in the health form in the MySejahtera app for international travellers when they're arriving. So they implemented that from the 1st of August. And that now means that, you know, in terms of travel procedures, things are almost like how they were pre-pandemic. You don't need testing. And in fact, you don't even need testing if you're unvaccinated. And that was kind of announced almost a little bit quietly, I felt. You know, I had to reread the article to read between the lines and realize that that was actually a change in policy from the 1st of August, that now even unvaccinated travelers don't need to be tested to be allowed into the country. But again, it's all about removing those barriers for international travel to happen. Certainly a really positive step forward. Other key developments from Malaysia from the past few weeks or so, it's now been reported that tourism arrivals, international tourism arrivals, have surpassed the 4.5 million mark. We saw over the Singapore Independence Day long weekend around 300,000 passengers crossing the borders daily. That's not just from Singapore into Malaysia, but Malaysia into Singapore as well. But we saw that border movement. Again, really big numbers, highest again since these land borders were reopened. And if we're looking at domestic travel, there's some big numbers there as well. So traffic at KLIA reached over 1 million international passengers in June, for the first time again since the pandemic hit. And we have seen Penang Port, which of course started to welcome international cruises. That has now seen over 35,000 passengers arrive over the course of July, 13 port calls, and expects another 200,000 passengers to arrive over the remainder of 2022. So again, big, big numbers for 2022, you know, like I said. Of course, we're always coming off a really low base and it's nowhere near pre-pandemic levels, but it's progressing. And we have even seen Tony Fernandez announcing that he expects all of AirAsia's fleet to be operational by March 2023. So again, there's this confidence even within the Malaysian tourism market that things are on the up.
Hannah, you mentioned big numbers, right? When it comes to international traveling, and how are these numbers measuring up to the targets which were which are being set by the governments? And is there a point to even set targets when it's difficult to even predict the pandemic?
Well, you're right. There are a lot of big numbers going around at the moment. And so let's take Malaysia as the example. And Malaysia, first of all, had this target of 2 million international travellers for 2022, which it then reached. And then it increased that target up to 4.5 million. And now it has reportedly met that. And so now it's increasing the target yet again and saying, actually, we think we're going to reach 8 million. So in the case for Malaysia, it's actually kind of unique how they are target setting within the region, because a lot of regions tend to just set this very high target first and then aim towards that, whereas Malaysia seems to be incrementally increasing that as things go and as, you know, tourism numbers improve. Thailand is always a big one. And Thailand is always interesting because there are so many different targets depending on who is setting them. So the TAT, the Tourism Authority of Thailand, the Tourism Board has a target. The Tourism Ministry also has a target. And then various other bodies also chip in as to whether they, what targets they think are reasonable for Thailand. So depending on who you're talking to, their target for 2022 international arrivals is anywhere between 8 to 10 million. The Bank of Thailand believes it could exceed 6 million. And certainly if you're looking, you know, year to date now, Thailand has had around 3.12 million travelers. But you still do some back of the paper calculations. It's still a lot of packs, a lot of passengers, a lot of international arrivals they need to receive in the last few months of the year. So if they're aiming for 10 million and they only hit around 3 million by July, that means that they still need to achieve 7 million between August to December. Now, of course, the year end is the high season for Thailand, so they have that going for them in their favor. They've now removed a lot of the barriers that were previously there. Again, you had to register before your arrival, you have to be vaccinated and everything else. A lot of these have now been rolled back, so it is a lot easier to visit Thailand than it was previously. But there still has to be this concerted effort to reach that target. Vietnam has a target of 5 million. Now, from January to July, they didn't even hit 1 million. So that's quite a big jump that they are hoping to go from just under 1 million to 5 million again by the end of the year. And even Singapore Tourism Board, which is kind of notoriously quiet actually over the pandemic years in terms of target setting, has come out and said that it's targeting between 4 to 6 million, noting some encouraging growth, they said, of 1.5 million in the first half of 2022. So, like I said, there's really these differing approaches between different governments within Southeast Asia. So some are really making that leap and setting the super high target, and others seem to be a little bit more realistic. But as you mentioned, you know, is there a point to target setting when it's very hard to predict what's even going to happen in the next few months? So much right now is outside of these governments' control. You know, geopolitically, we've of course got Russia, Ukraine. The past couple of weeks, we've had China, Taiwan escalations as well. There's a cost of living crisis in Europe, which is one of the key long haul markets into Southeast Asia as well. Border closures still in China. There's so many unknowns that are going on that, you know, pre-pandemic, it was perhaps a little bit easier to forecast because you could rely on past data. Now, it's sometimes I feel like it's just a stab in the dark for some of these governments, and they are just choosing a number and putting it there, but perhaps not necessarily based on logic. I think governments almost need to work backwards. You know, they need to figure out what level of inbound tourists could actually keep the industry afloat. At what point do they break even? And work backwards from that. So, okay, let's say we need to have a hotel occupancy level of 50% for hotels to break even. What would that mean? How many tourists, you know, how many hotels do we have in the country? Then how many tourists would need to stay at these hotels to hit that 50% occupancy level? And so on. I'm working it like that to figure out what is the minimum viable number to be able to keep the whole tourism industry alive. But I feel like that often doesn't happen. It's often just this big number that is set without quite working out what is actually needed to sustain the tourism industry. And of course, we are still in this period of needing to be sustained.
That's an interesting point, working backwards.
Mm-hmm. We have had a WhatsApp during little exchange there, and this is from number ending 6146. Sorry, I don't know your name. But they say, I have returned from Europe in July. It was a full flight. What I didn't quite understand is that passengers are required to wear face masks while in the flight, but as soon as the crews serve the flight meal, everyone takes off their face mask. Well, yeah. Mm. However, the real challenge when the international travelers landed is that they have to wait in the long queue for up to 2 hours in order to get through the immigration counter. The first impression is really bad. And after a month, I have the same feedback from my delegates from Europe still. Mm. I didn't have to wait too long getting back here in Malaysia, truth be told. It wasn't all that long at all, but it was mainly on the other side when I landed in Europe. Right. That was where the problem seemed to be. That being said, I have people who have flown out of KLIA and it was an issue. But when I was trying to check in here, that's when I was queuing for over 2 hours. Little things like, you know, having an elderly person's queue, an OAP queue, would be much more useful as well, because there was an old lady stood next to me and she was standing for over 2 hours. You know, she shouldn't have had to do that. They could have kind of pushed her through a little bit sooner, I would have thought. But there you go.
All right. Do keep your thoughts coming. You can reach us on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or Twitter at BFM Radio. Tell us, have you been traveling lately and how has the crowd been? We really want to hear from you. We do need to take a short break for some messages. But for now, here is Here and Now.
From Letters to Cleo.
Right, on BFM 89.9.
I have a dream.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Lily Chai, and
me, Rich Bradbury.
Right. We're talking about Malaysia's travel industry, the lining for takeoff, because we have met the initial goal of 2 million international tourists, and the new target is set at 4.5 million. And before the break, we were having a conversation with Hannah Pearson, the founder of Pierre Anderson and regional director at the Adventure Travel Trade Association, for an update on the travel industry. We do have a few more questions for her, but before that, if you have any thoughts about, you know, you've been traveling and your experience, do share it with us. Do keep your thoughts coming. We are on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us on BFM Radio on Twitter. So Hannah, let's go back to the conversation we keep having, right? The rise in oil prices and its impact on the tourism recovery in the region. And we have seen a slight drop in aviation fuel charges recently. Does this mean that we will see cheaper airfares very soon?
Well, you're right. You know, we have seen this drop in jet fuel price. So the IATA jet fuel price index, this is from the 5th of August, for Asia and Oceania shows that versus a week ago, oil prices have dropped by minus 9.4%. Versus 1 month ago, they're minus 11%. So there is that drop. But then you look versus 1 year ago, and it's still 61% up. So you can see that, yes, there is this drop. Does that necessarily translate into airlines offering cheaper fares? I shouldn't think so at this point. I think that airlines are still going to be very cautious about their fare setting. We've mentioned operational costs are high. They really need to be spot on with that. There's no kind of room for error. And I feel that once these airfares have gone up, it's then a little bit difficult for airlines to start really dropping them down so easily. I mean, that doesn't mean that these airfares are going to stay at these highs necessarily, you know, for the long term. But certainly in the short to medium term, there are lots of other factors impacting high airfares other than just the jet fuel price, you know, particularly when it comes to demand. And of course, demand is far outstripping supply at the moment. There's a lot more people who want to travel than there are seats on the plane, and that pushes fares up. So until airlines start to also add on frequencies, add on new routes, it's going to be a while until we see airfares start to normalize.
Mm. And with these airfares at highs, are we seeing a change in the destinations that Malaysians are choosing to travel to?
Well, that's a super interesting question, because other than the fact that airfares are very high, we also have the fact that a lot of destinations which Malaysians love to visit pre-pandemic, so we're talking destinations like Japan or Korea or Australia, they are not necessarily as easy as they were to visit pre-pandemic. In fact, I was talking to some travel agents recently, and they were really saying that, you know, some of these destinations are facing difficulties when it comes to visa issuances, or just the hoops that travelers have to jump through. And therefore, they're actually choosing not to sell those popular destinations because they know that they're going to run into difficulties. It's just very tough logistically to do. Instead, we're seeing Malaysians swinging to destinations that are easy to visit, like Turkey, for example. Very easy to visit and popular destination. It was popular pre-pandemic. It's still popular now. So you have this combination of, you know, a question of flight availability, but also the ease of visiting. But actually, Malaysians have it easy when you compare it to countries like Thailand or like Vietnam, particularly for visiting Europe. Those countries actually need Schengen visas. And right now, at some of the embassies, the wait to get a Schengen visa could be 2 to 3 months. So Malaysians in that kind of way have life a little bit easier. And even in Vietnam, we've had this recent case where they changed the passport format and started issuing new visas, new passports. And these passports are actually not being recognized by certain embassies within Vietnam to issue visas because it was missing certain information. And that's kind of being rectified now, but it certainly doesn't instill confidence within travelers.
Mm. Hannah, the real question, in terms of the tourism industry, right, are we really progressing towards recovery?
Overall, I'd say yes. Last year, it always felt like one step forward, two steps back. Every public holidays, domestic tourism potential was limited by another surge in COVID cases or a lockdown. This year, it feels like we're having this gradual progression, that the line is slowly, slowly inching upwards. And now, of course, you know, this recovery rate is too slow for much of the tourism industry. But that sustained recovery at least is good. That's giving tourism businesses confidence that they can reopen. They can invest once more into their businesses, areas like digitalization, for example. And it also gives consumers confidence that there won't be any backtracking on reopening. And it also means that we haven't seen that level of disruption that, for instance, London Heathrow has been in the press recently. So I think tourism industry really needs to be patient, and consumers and the general public need to recognize that tourism businesses are still in this recovery phase. They're not yet out of the woods, and they still need support both from the government but also from the general public.
Okay, Hannah, final question for you then. You just mentioned digitalization of tourism businesses. Tourism SMEs pre-pandemic were quite slow to adopt digital technology. We know that. Has the pandemic changed that?
You're right. I mean, digitalization was pretty slow pre-pandemic for tourism businesses. And that's a lot to do with the fact that much of tourism is quite a manual process, particularly if it comes to customization. But we've seen an increased focus from governments on supporting tourism businesses to become more digitally savvy. For example, in Malaysia, we have seen Tourism Malaysia team up with Shopee, which allows smaller tourism businesses to tap into e-commerce platforms. We've also seen the launch of Matter Online, where travel agents can post up their packages, which can then be bought online in one kind of consolidated online platform, which again is a great idea to really enable those smaller travel agencies who perhaps don't have an online presence to really piggyback on this platform and potentially find new consumers. And further afield, looking at places like Indonesia, there's even this focus towards digitalization there. Now, Indonesia has this concept they call tourism villages, which is essentially developing these villages for tourism and trying to do that throughout the country. So not only in key tourism destinations, but also in more off the beaten path areas that, you know, help spread that benefit of tourism. And we have seen, you know, the tourism ministry in Indonesia really try to support these tourism businesses to go digital as well. In Vietnam, they have a one commune, one product concept. And what that essentially means is making sure that villages who are specializing in certain products, whether that's food or other kind of souvenirs, are focusing on that and giving them a reason, if you like, for tourists to visit. But also they're digitalizing that too. You know, it's a form of rural commerce and allowing them to sell their products online, put them directly in touch with tourists, but also consumers too. Like I said, you know, there's this idea of spreading that benefit of tourism beyond just those major destinations. So it benefits the whole country and more communities as well.
She mentioned the word souvenirs, right?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that word in such a long time. Thank you so much, Hannah. That was Hannah Pearson. She's the founder of Pierre Anderson and the regional director at the Adventure Travel Trade Association. And she gave us a little bit of update on the travel industry. That brings us to the end of the show.
It does.
But don't go anywhere. After the 1 p.m. news bulletin, we have the Breakfast Grill replay, where the Morning Run spoke to Mark Weiser, the vice president of OutSystems. So OutSystems is a local development platform and makes it easy for businesses wanting to develop apps or other channels to reach customers. But how different is low-code, and is the price affordable for local SMEs? These are the questions that they ask, and that's coming up right after the 1 p.m. news. And as usual, if you have missed any part of the show, you can go ahead on our website at bfm.my or the BFM app that is available on the Apple App Store and Google Play. We'll be back same place, same time tomorrow. It's been Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Lily Chai, and
Rich Bradbury.
BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.